All right, strap in, everyone, because today we are going deep on a Supreme Court case that still impacts how our voting districts are drawn to this day.
A case all about redistricting.
You heard that right. Carter v. Daggett, bet you didn't see that coming.
It shows how even small, seemingly insignificant details in the law can have a huge impact.
And we are talking small. This case, a difference of less than 1% in population between districts, caused a major constitutional crisis.
Oh, yeah. This one all went down back in New Jersey in the 1980s. After the 1980 census, they had to redraw the congressional map to keep up with the population shifts. And that's where all the drama began.
Okay, so set the stage for us. What was happening in New Jersey that led to this case?
So, as with a lot of states, the population in New Jersey wasn't all spread out evenly. Some areas had grown way more than others, and on top of that, they had to lose a congressional seat.
Ah, so fewer slices of the pie, but just as many hungry mouths to feed. Got it. So, how did the state try to fix this?
They came up with a plan. It was called the Feldman Plan, and it divided the state into 14 congressional districts. It seemed pretty fair at first glance. I mean, the population difference between the largest and smallest districts was less than 1%.
It does sound pretty reasonable on the surface. So what was the issue?
Well, this group of voters, they sued, saying that even that tiny difference, that less than 1%, it still violated the whole idea of one person, one vote.
Okay, so their argument was that their votes were basically watered down because their districts had more people than some of the others.
Exactly. They felt like their vote wasn't carrying the same weight.
Hold on. Less than 1% was enough to go to court over. That's wild.
It might seem crazy, but it really shows how seriously the court takes this idea of equal representation. It all goes back to Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution. That's where it says representatives should be chosen by the people and apportioned according to population.
Okay, so the Constitution sets up the rules of the game, but doesn't really give us a formula for how equal districts need to be, so that's where the court steps in.
Right. So in this case, in Carter v. Daggett, the Supreme Court had to figure out if there's a minimum threshold for these population differences, a de minimis standard, as it's called in the legal world.
Basically, could a state say, hey, our districts are close enough, so we're good?
Well, they tried, and the court basically said, nope, close enough isn't good enough when it comes to congressional representation.
Wow, okay, so they tossed the whole New Jersey map over a tiny population difference.
They did. Their reasoning was that even small population deviations could give some voters way more power than others, and that undermines the principle of one person, one vote.
So they set a precedent saying any deviation needs to be justified.
Yep, they laid out a two-part test. First, anyone challenging a redistricting plan has to show that a plan with even closer population numbers was possible. Then, the burden shifts to the state, and they have to justify any remaining differences.
So the state can't just say, well, we tried our best. They have to have good reasons for that difference, no matter how small. So what are those reasons? What would the court accept?
Well, the court gave some examples of what they call legitimate state goals. Things like maintaining compact districts, keeping existing political boundaries like county lines intact, and trying to avoid breaking up communities that share common interests.
So it's not just about the numbers, it's about other considerations too.
Exactly. It's a balancing act. And the court made it clear that these other goals can't just be excuses to create unequal districts. They have to be real and demonstrable reasons.
Okay, so how did New Jersey try to defend their map? They had to have some justification, right?
They did. They pointed to things like the county boundaries and keeping towns from being split up between different districts. They even argued that their plan kept incumbent representatives from running against each other, which, I mean, you can imagine wouldn't be very popular.
Interesting. So they tried to prove that their maps served those goals the court laid out. Did it work?
Not so much. The court found other plans, with even smaller differences in population, were totally possible. There was even an alternate plan, they called it the REOC plan, that only had a deviation of 0.45%.
Wow, talk about cutting it close. So they were basically told, if you can get closer to perfect equality, then that's what you got to do.
Yep. This case sent a clear message to states, don't mess around when it comes to giving voters equal representation.
Mm.
Welcome back to the deep dive. Before we got sidetracked talking about population equality, we were talking about how Carter v. Daggett really changed things up in the world of redistricting.
Yeah, it really is surprising how a case about what seemed like tiny, almost insignificant population differences could have such a huge impact down the line. So break it down for me. How did Carter actually change the way states draw their maps.
Well, like we were talking about, the court's decision basically started this trend towards these so-called zero deviation maps.
Zero deviation maps.
Yeah, where states aim for practically the exact same population in every single district. Like they took one person, one vote, and made it into this super strict mathematical formula.
And they have those powerful computers to make it happen.
Exactly. Technology, computers, they played a huge role. After Karcher, you saw states using increasingly sophisticated software to draw these meticulously balanced districts. It was like a race to see who could get the closest to perfect equality.
But I'm guessing this pursuit of mathematical perfection wasn't without its downsides.
You got it. In trying to hit that numerical balance perfectly, map makers ended up creating some districts that, well, they looked a little strange, to say the least.
Strange how? What do you mean?
You had all these oddly shaped districts, all these weird, jagged boundaries that would snake through neighborhoods and sometimes even split up communities that had always been together, kind of like they were playing Tetris with voters, trying to fit them into these perfect little boxes.
So, by trying to get things equal mathematically, they actually created districts that didn't really make sense from a practical or a community standpoint.
Right. It's like they say, sometimes the best plans, you know? Sometimes focusing too much on one single goal can create a bunch of unintended consequences.
I see what you're saying. And this hyper-focus on population equality, it feels like that could have messed with minority representation too, right? I mean, redistricting isn't just about the numbers. It's about making sure minority groups have a fair chance to elect their own candidates.
You're right on the money. And that's where things get really tricky. Because after Karcher, some states, trying so hard to avoid any population differences, they actually ended up with districts that were too racially homogeneous.
Wait, how is that even possible?
Well, think about a city with a big minority population. They try to avoid any population differences, and the map makers end up packing a ton of minority voters into a single district. So the surrounding districts, they end up with way fewer minority voters. Ah, okay. So they tried to be super precise with the numbers and ended up diluting minority voting power in those surrounding districts.
Exactly. A well-intentioned rule can sometimes backfire in a big way. It even led to another super important Supreme Court case, Shaw v. Reno, where the court came out and said that race can be a factor, sure, but it can't be the main factor when you're drawing district lines.
So it's like a constant balancing act, this whole thing. Courts, lawmakers, everyone's trying to get that equal population, make sure minorities are represented, and keep communities together at the same time. Sounds like a real mess.
You could say that. And it didn't stop there. Technology kept changing, and that added a whole other level of complexity to everything.
What do you mean? We just talked about how computers made these precise maps possible in the first place.
Yeah, but technology never stops, right? The mapping software got more and more powerful, more sophisticated. It could take tons of data, look at voting patterns, and even predict how certain demographic groups might vote. So now we're not just talking about equal populations, but also using data to maybe predict or even manipulate how elections turn out. That sounds like a recipe for disaster.
You're getting it. And this is where those concerns Justice Stevens brought up in his opinion in Karcher, they really start to hit home. Remember, he was worried about gerrymandering. That's when you mess with district lines to help out a certain party or candidate.
Right. He was basically a time traveler warning us about messing with redistricting for political gain. And it seems like tech is making that even easier to do.
Exactly. With these super advanced tools, it's easier than ever to draw districts that give one party a huge advantage, all while keeping the population numbers practically equal.
So Karcher, this case that was all about fairness,
yeah,
it might be making things less fair in a way.
It's a strange situation for sure. And it leads to this big question. Is Karcher's super strict standard, the hyper-focus on numbers, is that still the right way to do things in the 21st century?
So we have all these unintended consequences, technology changing how things are done, and this huge question about whether Karcher's legacy is one of fairness or maybe something else entirely.
And that is exactly where we're headed next. Get ready to dig into the future of redistricting. We're going to grapple with some big questions. Representation, technology, and the very heart of democracy.
I am ready.
Oh!
Listeners, make sure you join us for part three of our deep dive into Karcher v. Bagot. We are going to tackle these big questions head on. Welcome back, everyone. We've been on quite a journey, haven't we, with Karcher v. Bagot. Looking at how this case, it seemed so simple at first about population equality, but man, it has impacted everything.
Yeah, the shape of districts, even how we use technology in elections. It's crazy. Yeah,
it really is. It shows you how law, tech, society, it's all connected.
Totally. What starts as a legal issue can have massive effects on how democracy actually works, you know?
That's a good point. And it feels like we're at this crossroads right now. On the one hand, you've got Karcher, super strict, gotta have those numbers perfect. But then on the other hand, look at all these consequences we've been talking about.
Yeah.
The weird shapes of districts, minority voting power maybe being diluted, gerrymandering getting more and more sophisticated.
It's a tough situation. How are we supposed to balance all these things? Equality, fairness, making sure communities are represented. Can we get all of that at once, or are we stuck having to pick and choose?
Big questions, no easy answers.
Yeah.
So what are people saying? What are some of the ideas out there to address all of this? Any solutions on the horizon?
Well, you have a lot of legal scholars, activists. They're saying maybe, just maybe, we went too far with Karcher.
Went too far.
Yeah, that by focusing so much on the numbers being perfect, we might have lost sight of other things that are just as important.
Like what?
Well, some folks are pushing for community of interest criteria to be a part of redistricting.
Community of interest? What does that even mean?
It means that we need to try to keep communities together when we draw those lines, even if that makes the populations a little bit different. It's recognizing that in real life, people's lives, their interests, those don't perfectly follow the lines of a census block.
Right, right. So instead of just crunching numbers, we'd be looking at how communities actually function, how they're connected.
Exactly. Imagine a town that's divided by a river, right?
Right.
Maybe the population on each side is a little different.
Yeah.
But it makes way more sense to keep that town together in one district. They've got the same schools, the same parks, the same businesses, all that.
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense in the real world. But how do you measure community of interest? That feels pretty subjective, you know?
It definitely presents challenges. I mean, you need clear metrics, transparency in the process to make sure there's no bias or manipulation. But some states are already trying this out. It's interesting.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're having public hearings so residents can talk about their community ties. They're using these mapping tools so that regular people can draw what they see as their communities of interest. And some are even using stuff from social media to see how people identify themselves.
Wow. That is really interesting. It's way more participatory, which I like, but also sounds like a logistical headache, honestly.
It is complex, but the good that could come out of it is huge.
Yeah.
If you give communities a real voice in the process, you might end up with districts that represent them better, that are more responsive to what people actually need.
And that's what it's all about in the end, isn't it?
Yeah.
Making democracy work.
It is. And speaking of making democracy work, another trend that's worth keeping an eye on is these independent redistricting commissions.
Right, right. Those groups that are supposed to take the politics out of redistricting.
Mm-hmm.
How's that going?
Well, it's mixed. To be honest, some have done great, created fair, impartial maps. Others have, well, gotten bogged down with partisan stuff.
Figures.
It really depends how they are set up, who gets appointed to them.
Right, right. So no magic solution. But it's an interesting idea. Taking the power to draw the lines away from politicians, that's going to help with the whole gerrymandering thing.
Yeah, it's a good step. Shows that people really want reform, you know, more transparency, accountability, and the whole redistricting thing.
So as we're wrapping up our deep dive into Karcher v. Daggett here, what's the main takeaway for our listeners? What should they be thinking about going forward with all this new technology and the debates about redistricting still raging on?
I'd say the biggest thing is to remember that this isn't just some abstract legal thing happening somewhere else.
Right.
Redistricting, it affects all of us.
Yeah.
It determines who represents us, how our voices are heard, basically how our democracy functions, period.
It's not just lines on a map. It's about power, representation, the future of the country, all of that.
It is. And we all have a part to play in shaping that future.
Sure.
We need to stay in the loop about how redistricting is happening in our states. We need to get involved in these debates, hold our leaders accountable to create fair maps that represent everyone.
Well said. And to our listeners, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Karcher v. Daggett. It has been a fascinating journey. Hopefully you're leaving with a better understanding of this landmark case and all the ways it has shaped our democracy.
Remember, the more we know about these issues, the more prepared we are to push for a more just and equitable system.
Couldn't have said it better myself. That's a wrap for us. Until next time, keep learning, keep questioning, and keep pushing for a better world.